Jesus had this way of messing with the rules. And he kept touching people who law prevented him to touch, making himself unclean. Again and again and again and again. Here is one of those stories. A large crowd followed Jesus and pressed around him. A woman who was there, who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, she'd suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors, had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. Because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. She touched his cloak. Immediately, her bleeding stopped. She felt in her body that she was freed from her pain and suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding around you and against you, Jesus?" his disciples answered. "And yet you ask, who touched me?" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. Jesus said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. Be freed from your suffering." I recently saw a TED Talk. Have you seen TED Talks? Highly recommend TED Talks. There's one by Brené with a B, Brown, on vulnerability. If you get a chance, again, the Google people are going to pay me a little commission on the side, because I suggest you Google TED Talk, Brené Brown, on vulnerability. And one of the things she says is that deep down, we are neurobiologically wired for connection. In order to experience depth and meaning and richness in life, in order to experience joy, we need to be connected. We need to be connected. But yet she says, the universal woundedness that most, if not all, share is a sense of shame. And she defines shame as the fear of being disconnected. The fear that if you really saw me, if you really could see who I really am, you would reject me because I'm not enough. I'm not good enough, smart enough, rich enough, thin enough, whatever enough. And I carry this sense of shame. And she's a social researcher that has done thousands and thousands of interviews. And what's amazing, she says, those who have this sense of love and belonging are the rare ones who somehow have come to believe that they are worthy of love and belonging. But that sense of shame creates in us the sense that we're not even worthy of the connections deep down we long to experience and that we desire. Well, all through this Lenten season, I've been encouraging you to be uncomfortable. I have been suggesting that our spiritual growth, our spiritual journey, has something to do with stepping out of our comfort zones and stretching and allowing ourselves to be uncomfortable. And so the last several weeks, I've tried to do that myself in my preaching. I've tried to take risks and do something a little differently. And this morning is no different. So what I want to invite you into is the story. I want to invite you into the story of the bleeding woman. But as you enter the story of the bleeding woman, I invite you to bring your own story. The discomfort I invite you to encounter this morning is maybe what it is within you that creates a sense of shame. Or what is it in you that perhaps you feel if people really see? If they really see? Or what is it in you where you feel broken? Where you need healing? So let us enter into the story of the bleeding woman.
I'd become accustomed to the bleeding and the weakness that accompanied it. It was the loneliness that consumed me. For 12 years, my body has unnaturally and uncontrollably bled. At first, I thought it was just my monthly courses run long, but it didn't stop. I tried to hide it from my family, concealing the soiled rags I carried to wash at the river, but my mother knew, as she always does. The condemnation in her gaze was palpable. What would she do with an unclean daughter? At first, they took me to the physicians, always the Roman healers, not the Jewish ones. They didn't want people in our community to know that I was unclean. The doctors were more than willing to take my parents' money, but none of them listened to my story. It was as if they didn't even see me, and nothing they did came close to curing me. The bleeding continued, and I grew weaker and weaker. It wasn't long before I was too weak to even help my mother with the chores at home. It was then that my father had the idea to marry me off as quickly as possible. I suppose he knew that my condition would be discovered, but then it would be another man's problem. I'm surprised I survived the night my husband found out the truth. It was a blessing that I lost consciousness after the third blow from the back of his hand. The man took me back to my father, demanding payment to compensate for the humiliation of having married a useless, unclean woman. My father denied any knowledge of my condition, calling me a deceptive harlot, spitting in my face and saying that I was no daughter of his. Now my shame was common knowledge. Everyone knew I was unclean. No one could touch me. And everything I touched was considered contaminated. No merchant would allow me near his wares. No housewife would allow me to pause to catch my breath on their doorstep. I was reduced to begging for the occasional bite of bread, as my condition barred me even from the profession that desperate women turn to when they find themselves without a home or a family. No one wanted to be near me. Eventually, I got used to the bleeding and the weakness, but the loneliness was unbearable. Not a single person touched me for nearly 12 years. Aside from being spat upon or an occasional kick from daring young boys. 12 years without a shoulder to cry on, a sister to help me braid my hair, a hand to hold when I was afraid. For 12 years, I endured exile from the synagogue as well, forbidden to enter the one place where I might find peace, no longer allowed to raise my voice in praise of God or hear the precious words of the Torah read. I am impure, invisible, worthless to God as I am to the world. But then just when I thought I could no longer tolerate the agony of my circumstances, I began to hear stories of a rabbi who would heal the sick and even raise people from the dead. And somehow I knew that this man was different from the other physicians and healers who took my father's money, promising a cure for my condition. I don't know how I knew, but something deep inside gave me hope that this time I would finally be well. It took me several days to work up the courage to approach him, and I knew I could never ask him outright for healing. I doubted that any rabbi would heal a woman who broke the taboo of speaking to a man publicly. Even approaching him openly was forbidden to me as an unclean woman. So I knew that my only hope was to secretly approach him. If he truly was a miracle worker, just touching the hem of his cloak would surely be enough. I was adept at slipping quietly through crowds unobserved and prayed my touch would go unnoticed. I saw him hurrying through the streets on the day I had chosen to see him. He was in the company of a synagogue leader. His disciples were pushing the crowds away to help him through, but I knew if I didn't seize this opportunity, I would never get another chance. So I slipped through the crowds until I was close enough. And then I reached out my hand and lightly brushed the edge of his cloak. And I felt a power surge through me. I felt alive, full of strength and energy I hadn't felt in years. I knew I was healed. I wanted to shout for joy. I wanted to tell the whole world that I was clean again. But I knew that no one would believe me, and it was necessary for me to slip away without being noticed by anyone. Just then, I felt the movement of the crowd slow. My sense of elation transformed to dread. He knew. He called out, "Who touched me?" His disciples laughed. They were in a crowd where dozens of people were touching him. But he asked again, and I knew my worst fears had been realized. I had risked everything for one chance, and now I would be punished for my desperate attempt. I wondered if in his anger he would whip me like other men I had unintentionally touched, or if he would reverse my healing, condemning me to isolation for the rest of my life. I understood that I had no choice but to confess. I fell down at his feet, trembling, awaiting his punishment. I hid my face from him as I told the story of how I so desperately wanted to be well, and that I knew that just touching his cloak would heal me. I hesitated as I told him that I had been healed. I was finally well. I apologized for my brazen actions, hoping he would understand why I dared to touch the edge of his cloak, risking his anger at being approached by an unclean woman. He met my apologies and pleadings with silence. And then I could feel my life shifting. I knew that the silence wasn't one of condemnation. He didn't shout at me. He didn't beat me. He didn't even walk away in disgust. Instead, he walked towards me, took my hand, and helped me to stand. And then I will never forget this. He placed his hand on my shoulder and said, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." I was astonished. My own father had rejected me, and I had not felt a comforting touch in so many years. And here this rabbi, this man, this Jesus, in front of everyone, blessed me and called me daughter. That touch, those words, restored me almost more than the healing had done. And at last, I felt whole again. More than that, I have become a beloved daughter, a child of God. I have been set free of the bonds of uncleanliness and isolation by the hand and heart of one man, Jesus. My gratitude is overflowing.
Everyone else called this woman unclean, unholy, unworthy. With one word, daughter, daughter, Jesus reminded her of who she really, really is. One word, one touch, 12 years of pain and isolation melted away. And I like to fantasize that this particular woman gathered others, gathered the lepers, gathered the tax collectors, gathered the prostitutes, gathered rich young rulers, gathered all of those who were rejected and felt and deemed unworthy, gathered them all together, and they sat around table and they broke bread and they drank wine and they laughed. They shared their own woundedness, their own brokenness. But most importantly, they reminded each other again and again and again and again of who they really are as sons and daughters of God. Regardless of the fact the world continues to try to rob them of that. And that's my prayer for us. It is not our strength that unites us. It's our vulnerability, our brokenness, our woundedness, our shame. May we remind each other again and again and again and again of who we really are as sons and daughters of God. May it be so.